Our next speaker and our chairperson, who has speaks here and runs over and speaks someplace else, is Fred Harding, who is the director of PositiveChoices.com, a new web initiative that provides effective, accurate, balanced lifestyle intervention courses on a multi-language platform. He has over 30 years of public health education experience in the United States, as well as being internationally known. He's married, two grown children, and four wonderful grandchildren. That means you're four times older than I am, because I only have one grandchild.
That's a new definition.
He's a pastor, and has a real passion for health ministries. I've appreciated his ministry and learned every time he speaks. In addition, he's a mountain climber. He climbs mountains. He's a chef. He likes to cook, and he knows how to cook, and he knows how to teach people to cook. And he's the technician who puts all of these PowerPoints and all of the audio on our screen. So let's welcome Dr. Fred Harding.
Thank you, Dr. Williams. Bright screen over here, and let me get confused. I want to talk to you about something today that is very close to my heart, because I have had the opportunity of doing quite a bit of study in this area, and it's one of those health habits, lifestyle determinants that is only really coming into sharp focus today, in the last few years. And that has to do with sleep and fatigue. And we don't have very much time. Dr. Williams set the timer on me like I asked him to do on everybody else, so it will go off in due time. The tired brain simply goes to sleep, and we have no control over it. Thank you for the reminder. I will be a little distant on the recorder for the first few sentences. Appreciate that. When we feel tired, we don't often realize what's actually going on. We have a sense that we need to get some sleep, we need to go to bed. But often we engage in very complex activities, not understanding that when the tired brain gets to a certain level of fatigue, it simply goes to sleep. And if you're flying an airplane or you're driving an automobile, you really do not want to be in that situation when your mind shuts off. Now, it usually shuts off in what's known as microsleeps, or just very short periods of time. And you may have been driving down the highway or doing something that you needed to concentrate on, and suddenly you realize you don't remember what happened in the last few seconds. Could very well be that your tired mind went to sleep and had a micro sleep. The seriousness of what takes place has to do with the activity that you're involved in when those things happen. If you're sitting in a lecture and you nod off, I did see somebody lose their computer out of their lap when they nodded off once, fell on the concrete floor and broke their screen. So that was a bit catastrophic. But generally, we bump our heads or we don't even do that much. The interesting thing about fatigue is that we usually don't think that it's affecting us. It's like our children who, when we say it's time to go to bed, they say, "No, I'm not tired." And yet we know that they're falling apart. They're emotionally a basket case. And yet they don't want to admit it. And that doesn't change in life. The circumstances do just a little bit. A good friend of mine who has done a lot of research in this area has demonstrated in several studies where he's taken adults and deprived them of sleep, measured their objective performance, that is, how well are they doing? They have significant decrements. And then he asked them the subjective question, how are you doing? And this particular one, the reference that I have on this one, had to do with college students. But subjectively, they all rated their alertness as being higher than when they were rested. And that demonstrates the problem with our own self-evaluation of our level of rest. What are the current trends today? I can't speak for it on a global basis because there isn't that research that I'm aware of, but I can tell you that in the United States, that the average adult is sleeping 1.6 hours less per day than were their grandparents. And that's even worse among teenagers who today are sleeping 2.5 hours less than they were in 1962. There's a national database of sleep trends that began in 1914, and it has an amazingly rich source of information in this area. There are all kinds of things that are competing with the time to sleep. It's very interesting that Thomas Edison, who invented the electric light bulb, the incandescent bulb, one of the driving motivations for his research in that area was that he considered that sleep was a waste of time and that if he could extend the daylight hours, that he would cut back on that wasted time and he would be more efficient and accomplish more. Well, he accomplished what he set out to do with the incandescent bulb, but the results have not necessarily been as he anticipated. I've had the privilege of getting acquainted with a Dr. Gregory Belinke. He spent almost 30 years studying cognitive performance, the function of the mind, and sleep deprivation. He's recently retired from as director of the Sleep Research Center for the United States Army. And he has retired in the same town where I live. And he's the head at Washington State University now of a new department that is continuing doing research. Just in the last 2 years, he's brought in $7 million of grants to the university to continue exploring this particular area. He's published widely. And a few years ago, he did a very interesting study, and it's one that I want to share with you because you can visually see what he was demonstrating. And he did it this way for that very reason. He took rested volunteer soldiers. He was working in the Army at that time. They made the best guinea pigs. They actually paid them to be participants in this study. And woke them up at 6 in the morning, and at 8 in the morning, they had an MRI and a PET scan at Johns Hopkins University. He then merged the two images of the individuals together. And you understand that tomography allows one to see many different slices of tissue in any plane that you wish to look at it. And it gave them, based on a lot of earlier research, about 20 years worth of research, they knew that there would be changes in blood flow dependent that would indicate the amount of brain activation or the ability of the brain to carry out its given role for humans. And the first slide I put up here, or the first image, is just one section, and there were over 250 that were analyzed on each subject in this study. But what you have up here is the frontal lobes, and you see there's a lot of bright purple, there's a lot of intense yellow, and not very much gray or blue. And that's true in this area of the brain as well. This is the visual cortex. This is where we translate what comes into our eyes into the images that we understand what they are. And it's very active in an awake person. And this, of course, is the brain stem. So, the higher the intensity of color, the greater the blood flow. Now, they took the same individuals, and this time, they put them in a retreat center. In fact, they were in a retreat center when they were fully rested, and they measured the amount of sleep they got. They measured their brain waves 24 hours a day. They could document the quality of the sleep they got and the quantity of sleep that they got. And they did a lot of other objective performance measurements on them that demonstrated they were fully rested. Same individuals put in this retreat center. This time, they did things like turn the fire alarm on at 2 o'clock in the morning. Then they turn it off. Wake everybody up. Then they could go back to sleep. Make them get out of the building. They put big dogs that barked loudly down the halls. They rang the phones in their rooms. They did all that kind of thing to disturb their sleep. Woke them up earlier than usual. Kept them awake later. They deprived them of sleep on average of 2 hours per night for 7 days. That's 14 hours of sleep deprivation or sleep debt in a 14-day period. They then woke them up at 6 in the morning and subjected them at 8 in the morning to the same tests they had previously. There was a washout period in their research as well. This didn't happen 1 week and then the next week. It was a very carefully designed and executed study. Now, you will see the difference when I put the next slide up between the rested brain, which is on the screen right now, and the brain of the same individual, but now having missed 2 hours of sleep for 7 days. So if they were getting 8 hours of sleep or 8.5 hours of sleep, they were getting 6.5 hours of sleep. Maybe like people at the Health and Lifestyle Conference, I don't know. But look at the difference in color. You can all see the difference. I'll go back to the rested brain. And now, the tired brain. You notice there's virtually no yellow left. There's a lot more blue and gray. And that is indicative that blood flow to those critical areas of the brain diminish as a result. Dr. Belenky said in the first publication, and he's had a number of publications in this regard. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what's going on here. Okay. He said, fatigue selectively targets the highest order of cognitive mental function and critical thinking becomes impossible when we are tired. What does he refer to as the higher order mental functions? There are four of them, five of them. There's discernment, that's the ability to recognize that there are alternatives to which a decision must be made. There is judgment, that's the evaluation of the alternatives that are discerned, which is the best. There is initiative, that is the ability to begin doing something that we've already know we need to do, or determined that we need to do. Creativity is the ability to look at a problem from many different perspectives and discover what is the best alternative. People who are tired lose creativity. This is not artistic creativity necessarily. This is the ability to look at a problem and look at it from this direction and from this direction and this direction and see what is the best option for solving that problem. And when they get tired, we tend to look at a problem this way and we say, that's the best alternative. We get tunnel vision in that sense. And then forethought, which is a measure of efficiency in life, that's doing things now that will save us time in the future. And if you finish a beautiful meal, when is the best time to wash the dishes? Right after you've had the meal, when the food is still damp on the plate. If you let it sit for 4 hours and dry out, it's going to take more time and effort to wash it, clean it. Forethought is very important for being efficient in life. These are the five order mental functions, and they're essential for making good decisions in a timely and appropriate manner. When we are tired, all of those things degrade, and we're not as efficient, we don't make good decisions. Now, I showed you a sagittal section of the brain out of Dr. Belenky's study, but and we notice that it's the frontal lobes, which is the decision-making area of the brain, that is the most affected by the loss of sleep. It's where we do our most critical thinking. It's where we make the decisions in life. And that's what is primarily affected. And that's why it's such a serious issue. Now, there is a little area in the brain called the thalamus, and it's in the center of the brain, just above the brainstem, and it also is significantly impacted to the magnitude of the frontal lobes by the loss of sleep. And just to illustrate, it's what happens if I had a precious liquid and I were to pour from in a large container and I wanted to pour it into a small container, I would need a funnel in order to do it efficiently without losing that precious fluid. But I could pour it at a rate that was faster than the size of the funnel could handle. And that's exactly what happens when we get tired. All of our sensory input is passed through the thalamus to the other areas of the brain where it's needed. And when we are tired, the funnel gets smaller, if you will. And the funnel fills up, and data spills over, information spills over, and it's lost. And it's irretrievable. And that's why when we're tired, we make decisions based on only partial information. And when we make decisions based on partial information, that's when we have the most risk of a catastrophic decision. So fatigue lowers our cognitive efficiency, and I need to rush here, and I'm sorry, but it reduces our ability to process new information efficiently. It lessens the awareness of our surroundings. That's because the funnel gets smaller, and we don't see all the things that are going on around us, even though we think we do. That's the same phenomenon of the college students who were sleep deprived and said they were more alert when they were sleep deprived, and yet objectively their performance measures were way down. They were down by 50%, actually, if you read the data. And yet they said they were more alert and functioning better than they did when they were rested. It impairs learning new information. It decreases long-term memory. And it makes our decision-making fall to chance levels, and that's when we tend to make catastrophic or bad decisions. Now, I'm reminded of a statement made by my favorite author that has informed me about a great deal of things in regard to lifestyle. And all of us who are Seventh-day Adventists are acquainted with this author. And in the book Testimonies, Volume 7, page 256, we read, "Unreasonable hours are destructive to the physical, the mental, and the moral powers. If the brain were given proper periods of rest, the thoughts would be clear and sharp, and business would be expedited." Today, science is informing us that that is true, very true, on each level, physical, mental, and moral, or spiritual. And yet today, science tells us that a tired person is an inefficient one, is slower, is less safe, and makes more mistakes. And there is incontrovertible evidence that that is a correct statement. Now let's look at a little bit of that evidence, and I only have a few moments to share with you. The impact of sleep debt on productivity is very significant. This is a study that looked at individuals who were all rested at the beginning of a 21-day study of productivity. They all did the same activities on a daily basis, and their efficiency of doing those activities was measured for 21 days. The red line represents those who slept for 7 hours a night. They were all rested in the beginning, and they got the most amount of sleep in this experimental protocol, and you notice that over 21 days, their performance went down a little. That is in part indicative of the fact that 7 hours of sleep a night is not sufficient. It's enough to get by on. And you will find that in the literature, that statement, it's enough to get by on. But it isn't enough for optimal cognitive performance. Those who got 6 hours of sleep per night, their productivity went down a little more, about 25%. Those who got 5 hours of sleep, their productivity went down more than 50% over the 21 days, and those who were sleeping 3 hours less, getting 4 hours of sleep per night, their productivity went down to about 12% of their rested level. Now, you will, some of you who are looking at this graph carefully will notice that productivity was higher at this point compared to those who got the 7 hours, even though they got less sleep. That's simply a phenomenon of the fact that they had more hours to be productive in because they were sleeping less. But you notice it didn't sustain that very long. For short periods of time, we might accomplish more, but it's not more than a day and a half to 2 days. That's what was demonstrated in this study. Today we know that there are significant risks from sleep deficit. In a study done recently, there were sleep-deprived people for 2 hours. This is a different study than I mentioned earlier, but they were deprived for 2 hours per night for 1 week. And after 4 8-hour nights of recovery sleep, they were still making more errors than before they started. Though we need several nights of good sleep to recover from periods of sleep lost. Now this one, some of you may be physicians in the audience. This will be of interest to you. And those of you who ever go under the surgeon's knife, it may be of interest to you as well. A couple of years ago, I had shoulder surgery. And my physician said, would you like to have surgery in the morning or the afternoon? I said, in the morning. He said, why that? Because I answered it so quickly. I said, because you'll be more rested. But notice this. Now, this was done on laparoscopic training. This was done on simulators for laparoscopic surgery. This is where they do surgery through small tubes in the abdomen. But this is very clear. They had a control group that was rested. These were all physicians. These were all senior residents, actually, during their fifth year of surgical residency. They had the control group. They were rested. This is the number of errors they made during the procedures. When they were on call, where they had lost some sleep, it was in the middle. And where they had no sleep, look at the number of errors they made. But also notice their efficiency went down. They made more errors over here, but they also, it took them longer to complete the procedure. Now, would you like a rested surgeon to operate on you? I think so. I can remember, and I'm going to be, we'll close here very quickly. I remember the first time I was asked, is it better to be drunk or sleep deprived? And as one who has never drunk any alcohol, that came as a bit of a shock, but you would be interested to find out that in the literature there's quite a bit of research. And today, we know that a rested person who has had two drinks has an equivalent performance to a person who has been awake for 17 hours. So this is a person who just got up in the morning. They measure their performance. Compare it with a person who has had, got up in the morning, had two alcoholic drinks, and then compared to a person who has been awake for 17 hours without any alcohol. And they have equivalent performance. Reaction time, cognitive performance, all the objective measures that can be done. And I think sometimes when I look at my life, I'm awake for 17 hours on too many days. Which time is the best to make decisions, morning or evening? I think it's fairly clear. A person who has been awake for 24 hours has the equivalent performance on someone who has a blood alcohol level of 0.1. And that's above the legal limit for intoxication and driving in every country in the world. Today we know that sleep deficit probably has an impact on the obesity impact. It has some profound influences on the interaction between ghrelin and the neurotransmitter ghrelin and leptin. Leptin being the thing that the substance that tends to lower appetite. Ghrelin tends to stimulate it. It probably has some significant impact also on And it does on healthy individuals, even on their ability to deal with glucose. You can take healthy young adults, deprive them of 3 hours of sleep per night for 6 nights, and they will have a blood profile of a diabetic. The good news is that when you give them rest, it reverts to normal. We don't know what happens when that happens when that takes place on a chronic basis. I need to stop. I'm going to skip through several slides here. Let me do that here quickly. I want to conclude with with two more slides. I believe that when it comes to lifestyle determinants that affect our physical performance, it also affects not only our mental performance, but it also affects our spiritual performance. And as a faith-based group of people, we should be very interested in what sustains and supports our faith and our spiritual activities. And I just will share one statement with you, again from the same author, found on Christ's Object Lessons, page 346, that anything that lessens physical strength enfeebles the mind and makes us less capable of discriminating between right and wrong. And sleep is definitely one of those. It clouds our ability to think clearly and make clear decisions. And as a result, we may not even be able to discern between what's right and wrong. And all of us are called upon that daily to act out on what we believe to be right. But it also says we become less capable of choosing the good and have less strength of will to do that which we know to be right. Have you ever done something that you knew was not right? We all have. Have you ever not done something that you knew you should do? Perhaps you were tired and your initiative had decreased. And a lot of studies have demonstrated that that high order mental function of initiative, the ability to begin doing something we know we need to do, goes away when we are tired. Very interesting study, and I have a slide somewhere there that I skipped over. Basically, they took young adults and they gave them what's known as an effort assessment test. And by the way, all those slides will be on the web, so you won't miss out on the content and the references. But this effort assessment test is a very unique type of testing that takes individuals and determines when they are rested their ability to do the hard things. Then they took them and they were sleep deprived, and they gave them the same test, already knowing what level they were able to accomplish problem solving at. And they found that when they were sleep deprived, even as little as 1 hour a night for 5 nights, that they no longer demonstrated the willingness to solve the harder problems, even though when they were rested, they had demonstrated that they could. And I often think that in the area of lifestyle, all of us have to make choices. Many of those choices are not easy. We have to correct already poor habits that have been developed over the years. And it's hard. Why make it harder when we're not getting enough sleep? So, please remember, sleep. It's as important as diet and exercise. It's only easier. Thank you very much.